It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning to you. It's Friday. With all of the excitement, I almost forgot that for the last 90 minutes. But yes, happy Friday to you. Thanks for hanging out with us for this next hour. Man, we've been busy. Not only start of week three in the NFL with the Jets and Patriots, and oh, how the flip script will, I think, in 2024 be a major piece of the AFC East. Now, the Bills have established themselves over the last few years, of course. Dolphins, we're not sure where they are with their starting quarterback or how long Tua will be away or how they could do with Skylar Thompson. But when it comes to the New England Patriots and the New York Jets, it's all different now. You've got people, I guess, finally buying in on the Jets after seeing their game on Thursday night, which is a little odd to me. But the fact that they have been dominated by the Patriots for so long, had the victory at Foxborough at the end of last season, or the second game of their rivalry last year. But to be able to finally beat them at MetLife Stadium, that was something they did not do very often under Bill Belichick. So maybe, just maybe, it does signal a brand new era for these New York Jets. But it was a home opener for Aaron Rodgers, a full home opener. There was more than a year in the making. He got to hear his name being chanted and sung by the fans who were appreciating him, making it farther than four snaps or deeper than four snaps into the game. And he did look good. He looked fluid. He was hitting all the angles. He was able to move around a little more than what I saw in week number two. I wouldn't call him extremely mobile, but still able to sidestep and get around and looked comfortable. Still working out the rhythm with Garrett Wilson. So that's part of it now, right? Because there's a little bit of frustration there. Not the frustration that people are making so much of in his exchange with Robert Saleh. Heavens, why is it that we fixate on something and turn it into something that it's not? It's just what we do with social media and the nonstop video access in 2024. Of course, coaches know there's always a camera on them. So both Aaron and Coach Saleh answering questions about what appeared to be an awkward exchange. That's what I'm going to call it. I thought it looked awkward. Aaron answered for himself. So we'll get to all of that, including the New England Patriots and their 14 missed tackles. Gosh, if you can't count on the defense for New England this season, then it could be an even tougher row to hoe than what maybe originally expected with the offense and all the changes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Our final hour here features not just a little football, with the Game of the Week poll that's up at Amy After Hours or on the Facebook page, but it's impossible to ignore, nor do I want to, what we saw in South Florida on Thursday evening. It wasn't just history. It wasn't just franchise records or a first in Major League Baseball's couple centuries, right? It was so much more than that, with Shohei Ohtani taking history by the horns, if you will, and doing it with such a flair that it might be one of the best offensive games that we have ever seen. I could give you the stat line. I'm not even sure it does it justice. Make sure that you check out either the video that we've shared on our show Twix at Amy After Hours or find it on YouTube. The stat line for Shohei Ohtani, September 19th, 2024. First time ever with six hits in a game. He goes 6 for 6. Five of them extra base hits. Two doubles. Three home runs. A pair of stolen bases. 10 RBI. Along the way, not only does he become the single season franchise leader when it comes to home runs. So no Dodger has ever hit more than 50 home runs in a season. He's done that. But also the first ever in baseball history to go over 50 home runs and 50 steals in a single season, calling it 50-50. People get upset about it. That's what we're referring to, home runs and stolen bases. But he went so far above and beyond. He blew that number out of the water.
Next stolen base for Shohei Ohtani. Not only would be number 50, but he would set the record for the most stolen bases in a single season by a Japanese-born player. The player he'd be passing is manager Dave Roberts. There they go. Ohtani down to third, and he is safe at third base.
Just a late tag. And Norby, the third baseman, was playing very deep, as I was surprised at how deep he was playing, knowing that Ohtani might take off. So the double steal in the first inning.
Stolen base number 50 for Ohtani, and they are standing at Lone Depot Park. Here's the old one pitch coming to Shohei. Swings, hits a drive, deep right field, number 49 for Ohtani, an upper deck shot. It's a two-run homer. The Dodgers lead it 9-3. Shohei Ohtani is now tied for the all-time Dodgers single-season home run record with 49, and he is one away from the first-ever 50-50 season. Oh, what a blast by Shohei Ohtani. He is a one-man show. And the pitch coming to Shohei Ohtani. He swings, hits a drive to left. This ball's back. There it is. Number 50. The first player in the history of Major League Baseball to have a 50-50 season. He is incredible. Shohei Ohtani with an opposite field home run. 50-50. What a day for Shohei. He is the new all-time single-season home runs leader for the Dodgers and the first ever Dodger with a 50 home run season. Shohei Ohtani is incredible. He is one of a kind.
Oh my gosh! Shohei Ohtani! The greatest day in baseball history! This is not real life. He is not human.
Love Joe Davis. We'll hear him in the playoffs, of course, but that was his reaction to Ohtani's third home run. So the 50-50 plateau was already reached by then. In fact, he was at 51 steals and 50 home runs, and then, for good measure, his first ever three home run game. So think about all the franchise records he set, his own personal bests, doing it all in reaching this plateau that has been so talked about. And the Marlins pitching, it was a mess. They were using position players at the end. But for Shohei to be able to have a night like this one, I might agree with Joe Davis there on Dodgers TV. This might be the greatest offensive performance we've seen in baseball history in a single game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Mookie Betts, he's an MVP. He's an incredible player in his own right. What was it like for him watching Shohei?
And I can't really explain it. I'm really just a fan watching it just like y'all are, you know. I just happen to have the closest seat, you know. All the feelings, I mean, I don't even know what feelings and emotions I have. It's just unexplainable witnessing history like that.
To be able to see what he's done, you know, since I've gotten over here is special, and he's an unbelievable dude to go along with it. So it's fun to watch every single day.
I know people all over the globe were watching this game. And we're excited to see that they got a chance to witness history. And, you know, this game has been around for a long time, and to do something that's never been done, he's one of one.
I like the point that Dave Roberts made before that, Jack Flaherty, seeing Ohtani as a teammate for the last couple months. Mookie Betts, of course, I mean, there isn't anything he can't do, and he's in awe of watching Ohtani, just like the rest of us said, and just like y'all watching him perform. And you can imagine that that's the reaction when guys realize that they're playing with someone special, regardless of sport. You don't even need to be a GOAT, but just to be alongside talent like this. And sometimes you get caught up watching as opposed to taking care of your own business. So I love that from Mookie Betts and from Dave Roberts, the point that this is global. It's international. You've got people all over the world watching what Ohtani is doing. And here is the best part. They are now in the postseason. They've clinched a postseason berth, at the very least a wild card, which means for the first time since Ohtani became a major leaguer, we will see him in October. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I did hear Shohei speak English in the clubhouse following the game. They were doing a special champagne toast, and Dave Roberts not only congratulated him along with his teammates, but also then they did a toast. Just, it was really subdued. It wasn't anything like what we saw with the Yankees or what we saw with the Brewers. It was very toned down. It was glasses of champagne there in South Florida. But they did ask Shohei for a couple of words, and he did say a couple of words, thank you, you know, appreciate it, but really kind of pointing to, hey, let's do something even bigger moving forward. And then through his interpreter talking about starting this 50-50 club.
To be honest, I'm the one probably most surprised. I have no idea where this came from, but I'm glad that I performed well today. I'm glad that the team won, and it was something I wanted to get over as quickly as possible. And, you know, it's something that I'm going to cherish for a very long time.
So Shohei Ohtani at 51-51 with 9 games to go. I have no idea if 60-60 is within his reach, but after the game that he had last night, seriously, 6-for-6, 5 extra base hits, 2 doubles, 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 10 runs batted in. Whoa. And I really love the fact that we saw him smile. He did a curtain call in Miami, but he smiled and he celebrated with his teammates, and he just allowed himself that exaltation. He's not very demonstrative, at least not when he's on the base paths. But we saw him kind of fist pump. We saw him get excited when he hit the 50th home run. And as you can imagine, just to get it done. But also to make the playoffs. This is what we heard from him and his camp when they were talking about the future, right? So he's still with the Angels. They clearly weren't going to make the playoffs. The Angels would have offered him the sun, the moon, and the stars. But what he said was important to him was participating in the baseball postseason. And it just wasn't going to happen with the Angels. And that's why he went to the Dodgers. Yeah, there's money. But it really was about him playing on baseball's biggest stage. And that will be a treat for the rest of us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Hey, not just the Dodgers clinching the playoffs on Thursday night.
Now the payoff pitch to Jimenez. Swung and ripped to right. There's a base hit. Hitting third. Coming for home. Ramirez. He will score. And the Guardians are headed to October. And yes, Cleveland, for the 14th time since 1995, you will have an October to remember. Andrés Giménez ropes a game-winning single to right, scoring Jose Ramirez from second. And for the third time this week against Minnesota, Cleveland stuns the Twins in 10 innings by a final score here today of 3-2.
The great Tom Hamilton on Guardians Radio. And how about that? With a flair for the dramatic, a walk-off single for Andrés Giménez clinches a playoff spot for the Guardians. And remember, they were the youngest team in baseball 2 seasons ago when they made it. Well, they won the Central 2 seasons ago as the youngest team. They had a weird swoon last year. Some injuries, of course, but just uncharacteristic. And you would think that they were going to build on 22, but 23 didn't work out that way. And now with Stephen Vogt, you've got a new culture, new leadership, a lot of the same guys, though, and it came together quickly.
I think because they saw the results, they saw how much better they were getting, but also our strength and conditioning staff, our medical staff, we worked them overtime this year because we did work our guys so hard. But today makes it all worth it, and we're not even close to being done yet.
How about that? Josh Naylor, when he knew the team would be special.
Honestly, probably first day of spring. Yeah, we had a great team meeting, went over some goals, and this is one of them. We got a few more to hit, so no, it's a great group, and I love sitting back and just kind of watching them celebrate, especially all the young guys. It's awesome, and yeah, this group is undeniable. I mean, relentless and fearless at times, you know, so it's awesome to be a part of.
Oh. It came to an end quickly. Sorry. little Friday freaky. I am sure whatever he had to say was enlightening, but it was hard to hear it with that awesome music pumping through the clubhouse. Good for you. Good for you, Guardians. Good for you, Dodgers, both clinching playoff spots, along with the Brewers, who've won the NL Central, the Yankees, who've clinched at least at least a wild card. And then there are others. If you're not paying attention to the Detroit Tigers, well, you should. It's pretty cray to see what they're doing. And I know that we've talked about them a little bit, but last night as the update, Twins and Dodgers. So did I say Dodgers? Sorry, Twins and Tigers. It's Friday morning. Tigers have now won four in a row. The Twins have dropped back-to-back games, so they have the exact same record. They're tied for that third wild card spot. The Royals are a couple of games ahead of them, and then the Orioles, who were able to get a win on Thursday night. So there's a lot happening in baseball with just nine games to go, but mostly celebrating Shohei Ohtani on this Friday morning, his history, and not just eking in over the wire. No. He had to put his stamp on it with a night that we'll never forget. All right, coming up, a little more on that Jets-Patriots game, because Aaron Rodgers looked like vintage Aaron Rodgers, and the Jets fans finally got the home opener they'd been waiting for nearly a year and a half. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good morning to you from the Infinity Sports Network.
Shotgun, Rodgers. Hall to his left. Jets trying to add to their lead. Fake the handoff. Rodgers to his right. Throwing. Caught. Touchdown. Terrific grab by Garrett Wilson for the score. Aaron Rodgers with a BP. And the Jets now in front 20-3. 6:18 to go in the third.
Brissett in the shotgun. The Jets rush four. Brissett on his horse once again, and he'll be sacked. Another flag down. Quinnen Williams brings him down at the 40-yard line. He did unload the football. I think he may have gotten away with a dump-off pass before the sack, but there's going to be a holding penalty on top of Quinnen Williams' pressure of Jacoby Brissett.
And he's banged up. I mean, he is taking a beating tonight.
Well, we're trying to change this whole attitude around here. You know, we're trying to build something special here. Get these fans to believe in us. They've been tortured for a long time. So last year was obviously a tough year. But it's good to be back. It's good to be healthy. So, again, so many people that I'm thankful for that got me to this point. But it's great to be a Jet. Great to have nights like this. And even better to have a weekend off.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It cracks me up that Aaron Rodgers is personally accepting the challenge of changing the narrative around the New York Jets. It's terrific. 27 of 35 for him, 281 yards and a couple of touchdown passes. You heard one of them with Ian Eagle on Westwood One. And then the defense, man, to me, the defense was the star. Seven sacks of Jacoby Brissett and Drake May. Drake May's out on the field for not even 5 minutes and gets sacked twice. The offensive line for the Patriots is terrible. 15 quarterback hits, one takeaway by that Jets defense, no touchdowns given up, only 78 yards rushing, and this was huge, to be able to limit what Ramondre Stevenson could do. They wanted to score early and then shut it down.
Part of the things that we've been talking about is to just get the defense a two-score lead, and it was a two-score lead, so I guess it was he just wanted to see something on defense.
The first thing, I got to look at myself in the mirror and make sure that, you know, I did everything I could to get the guys ready to go. And, you know, based on the score today, I need to do more. But going back to what I said earlier, just got to hit the reset button. It's NFL football, and we have to get better.
Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. I've heard that I don't know how many times inside the NFL. You just got to fix it, try to fix it and move on. Flush it, fix it, move on. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What is the game of the week? At Amy After Hours online or also on our Facebook page. Had a chance to catch up with Antoine Staley, Jets insider for the New York Daily News, right after the game. And I asked him, after hearing Aaron Rodgers call this a very special night, why?
He was great. I mean, he's tremendous. I mean, look what he did offensively. I mean, he was 27 for 35, 281 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And not only that, I mean, just to everything that he's gone through the last 12 months or so, getting back to this point and playing at a high level and, you know, beating the Patriots 24-3 on national TV. So, yeah, for a lot of it was a special night for a lot of different reasons. But I think first and foremost, just having that home opener and just reliving that moment all over again. And just and on a positive note compared to what happened last year.
The 4 snaps, right. How could anyone forget? What was the atmosphere like at MetLife for the home opener?
I think it was pretty electric. I mean, I think people were excited, especially, you know, considering the Jets squeaked out a victory against the Titans last week there. And then obviously you got, you know, the Patriots on the short week there on Thursday Night Football in front of a million. So I think definitely, you know, people were excited to be out there. It was a great atmosphere, especially introductions and a lot of electricity for Aaron Rodgers, too, especially considering, you know, the Jets ended up scoring 3 offensive touchdowns for the third consecutive week. And, you know, the fans were chanting his name in the third quarter and also the fourth quarter. They were just saying Aaron Rodgers. And it's something that, you know, I think a lot of fans are just have an abundance of excitement just to see what this offense and this team can go this season.
There are a lot of different numbers we could highlight to point out the dominance for the Jets in this game over the Patriots. What are a couple of elements, though, that you think underscore how well New York played tonight?
I think the sacks. I mean, they were. I never really seen a Robert Saleh team pressure as much as what they did, especially using the blitz there. Typically, they rely on just using their front four to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. But you know, with no Jermaine Johnson, obviously the Hassan Reddick situation there, you know, a little bit limited as far as pass rush. So they kind of used Quincy Williams. They used Jimmy Sherwood. They used some blitzes for the safeties. Chuck Clark even had a set. So I think, you know, everybody wants to talk about Aaron and the offense, and, you know, deservingly so. I thought they did a really good job. But I think
it's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The defense was really just the star of the game, and, you know, just underscored what they were able to do, especially considering they limited Lamondre Stevenson to 23 yards rushing, and also Antonio Gibson only had 29, especially considering the Patriots. That's really bread and butter just to run the football, and I think the Jets did a really solid job just containing that, only holding New England to 78 yards rushing.
Not only the 7 sacks, but 15 other quarterback hits. Both Jacoby Brissett and Drake May were bottled up a good portion of the night.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, neither one of those guys threw over 100 yards. I mean, combined, they threw for 120 yards, but Brissett only had 98 yards passing, and, you know, Drake May came in and cleaned up in the fourth quarter and only had 22. So, yeah, they definitely gave those guys fits throughout the whole night, and you tell that was the game plan, getting pressure on those guys and trying to limit the run, and, you know, it worked definitely for the night.
Antoine Staley is fresh off Thursday Night Football at MetLife Stadium, covers the Jets for the New York Daily News, and is with us after hours with Amy Lawrence. I know it's not Bill Belichick's Patriots anymore, but how big for the Jets to get this monkey off their backs?
Well, it's big because now they've won 2 consecutive games against the Patriots in the series, and I think it's huge. I mean, it's the first time it's happened since 2001 when they won 3 straight in the rivalry, and that was Bill Belichick's first going into his second year, and then that just shows you how much dominance Bill Belichick and the Patriots had over the Jets throughout their tenure, and they hadn't won consecutive games in the series since then. So just to be able to, you know, Aaron Rodgers talked about it earlier in the week, to kind of put their stamp on the rivalry, there's still some work to be done in order to do that, considering the Patriots won 15 consecutive games against the Jets. But now you kind of see the tide starting to turn a little bit. The Patriots are rebuilding. The Jets feel like they're close to, you know, contending for a championship. And the Jets did exactly what they had to do to a team that's beneath them on a talent level. So, yeah, I think it was all in all a good night for them. Probably left some points out there on the board, but, you know, you can't complain about a 21-point win at all.
How close are Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson to really making that connection and finding a rhythm that's consistent?
Yeah, I think you're starting to see just peaks and valleys of it, too. I mean, they connected 5 times tonight, but yeah, they had some off moments, too. I know it was a pass that was kind of behind Garrett, too, as well. Just, you know, it's going to take some time to get that chemistry down. I think, you know, you kind of saw it a little bit in the Tennessee Titans game when he was able to get the ball to Garrett, too. Now I think opposing defenses are keying on Garrett Wilson, and I think it's going to be interesting to see just kind of how, you know, the Jets and also Aaron just kind of handles that moving forward, too, especially considering, you know, that's his main target and teams want to take that away from him. And I think, you know, you kind of saw it with the Titans game, definitely saw it in San Francisco a little bit there. Did see some elements there trying to get Garrett the ball a little bit against the Patriots, but, you know, I think they, all in all, they tried to do a good job just kind of containing him as much as possible. He only had 5 catches for 33 yards, but I expect the chemistry to continue to grow throughout the year.
We know that Breece Hall can be an incredible weapon in the backfield, but we've now also seen Braylon Allen, not just with the 2 touchdowns last week, but getting some real good work again tonight. What's his role supposed to be with the team?
Well, I think it's good to have like 2 running backs and Braylon Allen and Breece Hall there. Just kind of, you know, good. Braylon Allen's a good short yardage back and also can take some pressure off of him, off of Hall. And, you know, also Braylon Allen can catch the ball at the backfield as people saw in the Titans game where he caught that touchdown. So, yeah, he can do it all. He's a do-it-all running back. I think he would start on, you know, a few teams in the league, including the Giants right now, if they are able to have him. But, you know, right now, you know, he's the second back to Breece Hall, and I definitely think he'll be a good compliment for them. And, you know, the Jets as a whole end up gaining 133 yards on the ground, and I think they're going to continue to use this two-headed attack to take some pressure off Aaron in the passing game.
What tells you that Aaron Rodgers is all the way back?
It's not even just the throwing, because I think when he's 70 or 80 years old, I think he's going to be able to throw. It's just about can he move? Can he move well? And I think we kind of saw that tonight in spurts, too. I mean, he ran the ball, you know, only 3 times for 18 yards, but it's just kind of the way he was moving in and out of the pocket, you know, on scrambles, also passing, his passing plays, getting, you know, some receivers more time to get open from defenders there. And I think that's kind of that old vintage Aaron Rodgers that we kind of saw with the Packers. He's never going to be the same mobility-wise because, one, he's 40, and 2, coming off an Achilles injury, but I definitely think we're seeing signs that he's close as he's going to be, and also more confident. I think he's more confident in what he was against the 49ers and also against the Titans, and I definitely think they showed tonight.
Jets beat writer Antoine Staley with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. So how quickly in the postgame press conference did the question come up of that exchange between Rodgers and Robert Saleh on the sidelines after the touchdown?
Pretty quick. They talked about just getting up by 2 scores, and Aaron also joked about how Robert Saleh is not a hugger. And he, you know, it seemed like Saleh was going in for the hug. It seemed like Aaron was going, like, I don't know who was going in for the hug, but, you know, Aaron ended up saying 2 scores. And that's, they've made an emphasis of trying to get up 2 scores and just kind of let their defense pin their ears back and, you know, get after the quarterback. And that's what you saw tonight, getting 7 sacks and playing with the lead, something that the Jets have, defense has not been able to play with the last couple of years regularly. And, you know, to have a guy like Aaron Rodgers can get you up, you know, by multiple scores there, it's going to be, you know, definitely dangerous for the rest of the teams in the league.
What is the latest update on Hassan Reddick?
None. Basically, it's kind of the same thing. Like, we're kind of in limbo there. Hassan, you know, the Jets don't want to give him a new contract or, you know, until he shows up in the building. Hassan Reddick doesn't want to show up until he gets a new contract. So we're just kind of at a stalemate, and we're going to see who blinks first there. With Jermaine Johnson going down, they're going to have to do something on the D line there. Will McDonald's been out of this world. You know, he has to admit there. I mean, he's had 5.5 sacks in the last 2 games. So I think he's played really, really well. It's been a revelation there. If anything, it's kind of a blessing in disguise after, you know, the injury, obviously, Jermaine, nobody wants to see that, but Will stepping up, I definitely think, you know, that's a bright spot in all of this. But they would love to have Hassan Reddick on the other side of that, and that would definitely take some pressure off Quentin Williams and also Will McDonald. But it's nothing new to report on that end, and I don't expect it will be in the coming days either.
Where do they miss Jermaine Johnson the most?
Just having that consistent pass rush, I think it's somebody that if you would have had a Will McDonald that's also emerging like the way that he did, and also have Jermaine Johnson and, you know, also Quentin Williams, who's also a menace as far as getting pressure on the quarterback there, that's where you miss too. And also, I talked to some of the players in the locker room. They say, you know, despite him being 25, 26 years old, Jermaine Johnson is a leader in that locker room. And I think, you know, just missing his leadership and the way that he, you know, rouses up the defense there. He is a quiet guy, but he's definitely an inspiration for a lot of even the veteran guys in the locker room. I know Tat McKinley talked about that with me, speaking to him throughout the course of the week there. But, yeah, they miss him in a lot of different levels. But most importantly, like just being a consistent pass rusher that he is, he'll definitely be sorely missed. And now somebody else is going to have to pick up the slack. And it seems like Will McDonald is taking that to heart and having a tremendous couple of weeks there.
Yeah, Jets are not lacking when it comes to pass rush. When it comes to containing a quarterback, putting pressure on those QBs, did use more of the blitz, as Antoine points out. But against that Patriots offensive line, you're going to have more success. So how does it fare moving forward without Hassan Reddick and without Jermaine Johnson? At A-Law Radio, you can take the After Hours Game of the Week poll or on our Facebook page. Now, coming back, or a little more on week three, but also if you did not see the weird, awkward, uncomfortable, over-scrutinized exchange between Robert Saleh and Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines, it's been explained, and I have the perfect way to bring it home, if you will. Few more minutes before we set you free on your Friday. Thanks for hanging out with us. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Carlos Ortiz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Thank you, Amy. The Jets dominated the Patriots, and it's starting to feel like Aaron Rodgers is back.
Shotgun, Rodgers. Hall to his left. Jets trying to add to their lead. Fake the handoff. Rodgers to his right. Throwing. Caught. Touchdown. Terrific grab by Garrett Wilson for the score. Aaron Rodgers with a BP. And the Jets now in front 20-3. 6:18 to go in the third.
Iron Eagle Westwood One Sports. Rodgers threw for 281 yards with a pair of touchdowns to Allen Lazard and Garrett Wilson. Quarterback Jacoby Brissett faced pressure all night and left the game in the fourth quarter with an injury, giving way to Drake May to make his NFL debut. But it was all Jets here as they rolled 24-3. In baseball, here's the updated list for Major League Baseball's 50-50 club.
On a 1-2, Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way! Back it goes! Season. Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club.
Dodgers radio on the call. Shohei Ohtani, that's it. That's the list. Shohei Ohtani with a three-run home run night, swiping two bags, becomes the first player to hit at least 50 home runs and steal at least 50 bases in a single season as the Dodgers dispatch of the Marlins by a score of 20-4. Final scores in baseball, Braves beat up the Reds 15-3, Rays doubled the Red Sox 4-2, Mets outslugged the Phillies 10-6, Guardians gashed the Twins 3-2, Blue Jays quiet the Rangers 4-0, Mariners slick past the Yankees 3-2, Rays doubled the Red Sox 4-2, Pirates toppled the Cardinals 3-2, Nick Gonzalez with a go-ahead RBI single in the 8th, Orioles knock off the Giants 5-3, and the Cubs over the Nationals 7-6. In the WNBA, Diana Taurasi gets a curtain call as the Mercury played their final home game of the regular season. WNBA postseason slated to start on Sunday. Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian announced quarterback Arch Manning will make his first start on Saturday night against Louisiana Monroe. And according to multiple reports, Trey Wilson, Florida's top wide receiver, had minor knee surgery this week. It's not considered season-ending, but Wilson has already been ruled out for Saturday's matchup against Mississippi State. I'm Carlos Ortiz.
Not a big hugger usually, so I didn't know he was going for the hug.
He likes to do the two-hand chest push as well. So, but he talks a lot about two-score leads. So I just kind of gave him a push and said, two-score lead. That's what happened.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I just love it when we are watching an interaction that is either awkward or weird or feels a bit obnoxious. Sometimes there's words. Sometimes it's just two humans and it's doesn't really make sense what's happening. Well, we had one of these exchanges between Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh on the sidelines after the touchdown. And you hear Aaron say, because trust me, the beeline to ask the question of Aaron and both Saleh, because I don't want to say everyone because that's not fair, but a lot of people right away pointing to, oh, there's trouble in paradise and Aaron's not happy with Saleh and Saleh's not happy with Aaron. But it did look like, if you were just looking at it from face value, not reading lips, that Aaron was upset about something. As you hear him say, he's just kind of putting a game face on and not wanting to celebrate because Saleh's always hammering home the whole two-touchdown lead thing. But if you see, you hear what Aaron has to say about he's not a big hugger, wasn't sure if he was going to push me in the chest, that kind of thing. It made me think of some of the more awkward situations that, depending upon how close you are with another human, one of them is when you're trying to pass someone and you both go to the left or both go to the right, or you're trying to walk through a doorway and you both go, you go to your left, they go to their right is what it would be. But you both end up moving to the same side of the door frame, and then you both end up moving back the other way.
You so keep doing that for 10 seconds.
Yeah, so that's one really awkward human exchange. Another one is when you go to hug and or, in Cuba it was double kisses. In Europe it's kisses on the cheek, whatever it is. You go in for a greeting and the person doesn't know what they're doing and they go to hug you at the same side that you go. So again, it's their opposite, but you're supposed to both go. Now, this is my experience. You're supposed to both go right. Does that make sense? When you go to hug someone or give someone handshake doesn't really, but like a kiss on the cheek or whatever, do you both go, you go right, he goes right, or not he, she, you both go right?
Yes, I think.
Okay. So do you go right or do you go left?
I think I go right, okay. But I use my left cheek. Left side,
Right, so your left side is closest to the other person.
Correct.
Okay. Yes, that's what I do too. But if you don't, and you both go to the, well, you go the opposite, right? And you end up on the same side, so you don't both go left or both go right. One of you goes left, one of you goes right, and then you almost end up doing a mouth-to-mouth kiss.
Each other's teeth.
Right, that's the worst. And it's embarrassing and it's awkward. So that's another exchange. Or what is more classic these days coming out of the pandemic is you go to shake someone's hand and they do a fist bump. And then you try to do a fist bump and they try to shake your hand. And it's another awkward exchange. So yes, we have all kinds of awkward human exchanges. That's what this one looked like. But there was a bit of a snarl on Aaron Rodgers' face. It was more about just the context. But I felt like, yeah, it was one of those kind of caught in between a hug and a bump me in the chest and rah! And it came out all horribly wrong.
I think it's also a little bit of Aaron Rodgers trying to tell him, hey, act like you've been there.
I love how you just think these things and you don't really have any basis to it. You're just like, I just think this.
Nothing whatsoever. No base. Just a thought of what it could be.
But it was so ridiculous to see how social media blew up over it.
Something for anything.
So dumb. It drives me insane.
They anything Aaron Rodgers does, they look into to stir it. And this is one of them. This
now,
is gonna be
to be fair, he does bring that on himself.
Of course.
So he does tend to talk a lot and has a lot to say, and he's very cerebral, which means that some of these things you would expect him to have a long, drawn out explanation for. But what he says is it wasn't awkward. He's not much of a hugger. I guess that means he is a hugger. So Rodgers is a hugger, but Saleh is not. So there was this kind of caught in no man's land, caught in limbo about who's hugging and who's not. I guess.
Well, I just thought of one other awkward exchange. The common go to shake someone's hand and they don't see you. And you're holding your hand out there for a little
while. Or in Tom Brady's first game, first official regular season game with Fox, when he held out the fist bump for Mike Pereira.
Yes.
And Pereira just left him hanging. Until Brady said something and then Pereira recognized him.
Now, if Brady went for the handshake, I think Pereira would have shook his hand. I think maybe
but
Pereira
not the bump.
Does a fist pump.
No bump.
Nope.
There's no bump. If you can think of any more awkward human exchanges, we're happy to also include those on the list. At A-Law Radio and then on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, you're voting for the game of the week. Week three. I wonder whether or not we'll see another Derek Carr crotch grab. Apparently, he told his family that when he scored a touchdown, that he would do a little MJ. I'm sure it looked just like him. He did not get flagged. In fact, you couldn't even recognize that it was Derek Carr. He did not get flagged on the field, but he did end up paying a fine reportedly from the NFL, that cracks me up. Of all the things that Derek Carr would be paying a fine for, crotch grab would have been not in my top 50. Definitely not on my bingo card.
On my top 500.
Right. So one of our candidates for game of the week is Ravens and Cowboys, both those teams in need of a good game on Sunday, but in need of a win. How about that? Especially when you're talking about the Ravens, 0-2 for the first time in 9 seasons.
Guys in the locker room, we know what we want to do. You know, when we go out there Sunday and we know we've been busting our behinds each and every game. It's like we're coming up short.
It's just 2 games in their same division. We know that the Bengals are also 0-2, and actually, they might not know what to do with themselves if they didn't start out 0-2. Joe Burrow gave this, we call it evaluation, I guess, after their 0-2 start. We're in a fine spot. Oh, are you? After you lost to the Patriots, who couldn't do jack on offense against the Jets on Thursday night, that's the team you lost to, but you're in a fine spot? Okay. Now, I know they looked a lot better against the Chiefs. They really did. And there's got to be some disappointment that for the 3rd straight year, you're starting out 0-2 5 times in 6 years. But I guess, again, there is familiarity there. Now, if they lose to the Commanders on Monday night. Don't ask me why this game is on Monday night. Well, I guess we'll get to see Jaden Daniels national TV. If they lose to the Commanders, then all hell should break loose in Cincinnati. That's a mess. And if the Ravens go 0-3, that's also tough in the AFC. Not insurmountable, not impossible, but just they're in a tough division and the AFC is thicker from top to bottom. So there could be a lot there. As for John Harbaugh, his defense, of course, without Mike McDonald now, so new coordinator, but they have to defend CeeDee Lamb.
We're going to have to make sure we take care of him and try to reroute him when we get a chance, try to move the coverage to him or away from him when we get a chance based on what the scheme is and try to do the best we can to keep him under control.
Oh, control, he was saying, control. So that's definitely one of the games of the week candidates, the Ravens at Cowboys. And then we've got no Tua Tagovailoa this weekend. Skylar Thompson, though, has gotten advice from Tua about Miami's start against Seattle.
He's given me some really great advice and has been a great sounding board for me. And if I have questions or something pops up that, hey, like, Tua, how'd you handle this or how'd you do this? You know, he's so quick to give me answers and to do anything to help me.
Glad to hear that. I know this is worst case scenario for Tua. Any other injury besides a concussion might not feel quite so gloomy. But according to people who are around him, his dad told Manti Te'o that he's in good spirits, that he's just focused on getting healthy again, meeting with doctors. We know from Mike McDaniel, he's been at the facilities, again, meeting with doctors, neurologists for sure, but also trying to be there for his teammates and be part of the game plan. And it's good that they don't think that is off limits for him, right? So like maybe he's not having adverse reactions to light or noise and doesn't need to be quiet and still all the time. I mean, that to me seems positive. So take our poll online. We will be back with you Sunday night to talk about all of it. Have a great weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.